Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the West London Sport QPR podcast. I'm Dan Bennett. I'm joined as ever by West London Sport's Ian McCullough and former QPR striker Kevin Gallen. Obviously, the football started again, so we do have a game to talk about, unfortunately, for you guys. But obviously, the big news come out on Sunday night after the game that QPR had confirmed the appointment of Neil Critchley as the new head coach. So, Kev, I mean, what are your thoughts on the appointment? Are you quite happy with it? Do you think it's quite a sensible one? I mean, it was kind of, I guess, the obvious one to go for, wasn't he, given he's sort of similar kind of background to Beal. And obviously we spoke on the last podcast about maybe being a good idea to get someone in who's got quite a similar background, and you know, he's out of work obviously after leaving Aston Villa. So I mean, what are your thoughts on Critchley?
Yeah, I don't really know much about him. I know you do, Dan, because he was manager of your team.
I do.
But obviously he done well at Blackpool, got him promoted and done pretty well last season. And then he left to be assistant, which was kind of a bit of a strange move if you want to be a number one. To be a number one, you don't know what is going on behind the scenes and with chairmen and stuff regarding budgets and are they going to back him, whatever. So we don't know the ins and outs of what happened. But it's a bit of a continuity appointment. It's got similar sort of academy background, but more experience than Mick Beal had regarding being a manager. So he was sort of the favourite from day one, really, and they've obviously got the man they wanted. Obviously, they probably looked into this in October when the rumours that Mick Beal was going to Wolves, so they probably had a shortlist up anyway. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I wish him all the best. You know, he's coming into a team, I think, 1 point in six games. Is it one goal in six games? Or was that?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a struggling, the form-wise, it's a team that is really struggling. But there's potential to win matches with the players QPR have got. So we all wish them all the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Ian, what are your thoughts on Critchley? Quite happy with it?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, just repeat what Kev said, really. It's sort of a sensible appointment on, you know, the outset. Again, I don't know too much about outside of what he did at Blackpool. I think if you're looking for a kind of seed of encouragement, what he did with Josh Bowler. Josh Bowler left QPR, obviously went to Everton, had two loan spells at Hull, didn't pull up any trees whatsoever there. And then he signed him at Blackpool and turned him into one of the most exciting players in the Championship. So, you know, if you're looking at that from a form guide, that's encouraging for, you know, the likes of the Willicks and the Chairs and other young players that QPR have. I think it's really important to have someone that knows the Championship. has played against QPR as a manager, so sort of knows the players from, you know, analysis and studying what QPR do well and what they do badly in matches. So that helps him sort of almost hit the ground running a little bit. Yeah, I mean, if you're bringing in someone from abroad or someone from a lower league that hasn't been in the Championship, that's an acclimatisation period they'd need, so he doesn't need that. He can come in straight away. He's, you know, facing a tough test at Preston, a team that are going really well at the moment, away from home. But he'll know all about them. So, yeah, so I think you look at it from that respect, it's a good decision. Again, personality-wise, Kev will probably touch on this when he speaks about it again, that it's like what we said about Bill, it's man management again. What's he like with players? Are they going to buy in quickly to what he is? He seems, from watching his interview yesterday, I've never met the man, so I can't speak about what he's like personality-wise, but he seems a bit more reserved, a bit more softly spoken. You know, Bill, very loquacious, very kind of, very different character to Mick Beale. And you could even argue that managers that have done well at QPR are more kind of outgoing personalities. So you need to buck a trend a little bit there. But let's just see how he goes, eh? Give him a chance. And I mean, they haven't paid any compensation for him, for his services. There'd be a bit of compensation for his assistant managers, I'm led to believe. But
yeah,
they'd come in. That was, I think, was the delay in getting it confirmed before Burnley game.
Obviously
Lincoln had a game at the weekend, so they probably didn't want to disrupt Lincoln's preparations, getting over the line. So, and you know, the usual red herring come out about Gareth Ainsworth on the Friday. That was never a non-starter.
Yeah, that was a strange one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's when people being considered and actually going to get the job are two completely different things. If you've got a short list of 20 people, they're all in consideration, aren't they? So
yeah, you feel like he'll always be on the list.
The story wasn't incorrect saying he's in consideration, but him getting the job was never going to happen.
I mean,
serious consideration, wasn't it?
In, regarding not taking the game on against Burnley on Sunday, and I've known managers who, you know, won't. I mean, it would have been, you know, if they had announced the management, him as manager before the game, you know, the atmosphere might have went up a little bit and there'd be more of a buzz. But knowing managers like I do, they don't, if they haven't worked with the team beforehand, they don't want to put their name just in case they lose the first game and then they're on the back foot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he probably could have been the manager on Sunday, but, you know, tough game against Burnley, top of the league. He's probably thinking, I don't want to, you know, my reputation or my record already without really doing any work with the team to go in and lose the game and I'm 1-0 against. So I think that's why, you know, they did it straight after the game and go forward now to the game on Saturday against Preston.
Yeah, well, it's just sensible, isn't it? Like putting Paul in charge, who's worked with the team a week, whereas, you know, Critchley comes in and he's not worked with the team at all in training. It would be pretty harsh to throw him straight into it, like you say, and make him manage when he hasn't worked with the players at all. So it's, you know, probably makes sense to give him a full week in training going into the next game. But yeah, I mean, I've got some thoughts on Critchley, obviously, from his time at Blackpool. I wrote a piece for the West London Sport website, which you can go and read, where I tried to sort of summarise everything that I sort of, the main things that I've learned about Critchley, obviously, from his time at Blackpool. And to be honest, I've got nothing but good things to say about him, really. I mean, he took Blackpool up from League One through the playoffs, despite a really difficult start to the season, and then stabilised a squad which, on paper, you'd probably would have backed to be in the relegation trouble that season to 16th. I think it was like 23 points or something like that, clear of relegation. So we were never really in danger of going down that season, and he did a fantastic job. But yeah, if I touch on what you said there, Ian, about the his character, I think that's the main difference between him and Beale. Obviously, there's very much like a view of him as like a continuity guy, because of their similar background. You know, he's an academy coach. He's worked at Liverpool as well. But in terms of the way they both come across, he comes across very differently to Beale. You know, he's a lot more reserved. He's softly spoken. He's quite quiet. And I can't ever really remember him at Blackpool like losing his temper too much and really going after the team after a performance. Whereas we look back at Mick Beale's post-match stuff from earlier in the year when he was at QPR, and there was probably three or four that he really expressed his frustration, didn't he? I'm thinking of Huddersfield as the main one where he really went after the team and the set-piece defending.
Doesn't matter what the staff are asking the players to do. If they don't want to go and attack the ball and they don't want to be around second phases, then we're not going to win football matches.
Couldn't imagine Critchley ever really doing that. So they are quite different personalities, and I think the players will probably have, it'll be different in terms of who's in charge and the way they communicate and the way they come across. I think that will be quite different, but there are a lot of similarities between both in that they've worked with young players before and they're academy coaches. And I think that obviously the remit and the job description hasn't changed much in a few months since Beale took over. So that will be a big part of his job as well, I think, is trying to help these young lads come on and, not just for the results on the pitch, either for the other side of it, you know, that QPR need to sell players to you know, continue as a club and to be successful. So I think that will be a big part of his job as well. And, look at the likes of Chris Willock and Ilias Cherry, who are having really good seasons under Beale, and hopefully he can continue that. But I think his main strength is like when he came to Blackpool, it really didn't start well for him. Obviously, he had two games and then the season got curtailed because of the pandemic. So it was a bit weird. He was for months, he was just our manager, but obviously he couldn't really do any work because there was no football on. But you look at that, the first season, full season he went into, and we got made some really good signings for League One. And I think we only won one of our first seven games, and he was playing this 4-3-3, and it was quite open and attacking, and it just wasn't working basically. And then he switched to a 4-4-2. With a big man and Gary Medine up top, which obviously you don't see very much. It's not very fashionable, but he decided to do it and it paid off massively and he never really looked back. So he's very pragmatic. And he said in his interview with the club yesterday that he's not going in with a system he wants to play. You know, I mean, we see often managers go in and they're like, I'm going to play this way. And then it ends up costing them their jobs because they refuse to change. Whereas he's not that person. I don't think he'll be scared to change. So I think it's an exciting appointment, to be honest. Obviously, it's not a massive amount to go off because he only had 2 years at Blackpool. And then obviously there's that blot on his CV, I guess, like you touched on there, Kev, which is he went to Aston Villa. Obviously, we don't know the reasons why, but it was quite a weird move at the time because Gerrard was under pressure anyway going into that season. So it's not it was a massive risk to go in there. And obviously, it didn't pay off for him and he got lost a job after 3 months. But I think based on his time at Blackpool and the job he did there, it's hopefully if he can continue that sort of the record he had there, it would be a really exciting appointment. Any other thoughts on Critchley, or should we move on to Burnley?
Yeah, I think, the fact that he worked at Liverpool, someone like Jurgen Klopp entrusted him to take the team in the Carling Cup?
Yeah, it was because they had that
team involved in something else. I know it was fundamentally his team. 20 under 23 in Liverpool, but even so, if you're working alongside someone as revered in the game as Jurgen Klopp, then you've got to have something about you to be trusted to do that. So we shall see. Do you think, Kev, that will give him, because he's come from Liverpool and worked at Villa, albeit briefly, and worked with Steven Gerrard, do you think that will kind of cut any ice with the players?
Sort of. And a big club in Blackpool as well, obviously.
I just believe it will be based on his personality and the way he treats the players and his demeanor and the way he goes around the training ground, just speaking with the players. And that's the main thing. If you get players on side, if you're honest with them and you're truthful, players will want to work, will want to run for you, want to work for you. I don't really know much about him. I see his interview. He's a bit more softly spoken, a bit more reserved. But that might be just something he does with the press. He might be completely different on a training ground, on a match day. We don't know that yet. So it's all wait and see. He's got a week to work with the players, and he'll obviously know some of the players from last season playing against QPR. But he'll also be probably watching videos of recent games and games when we were playing really well to get a flavour of what sort of type of football and what system that we're going to play. But I quite liked what he did say, and you said it there, Dan, that he's going to play what he believes is the best system that he can get results out of from the players instead of, I'm playing this way, where, hold on, that don't suit our players. So I think it's a really interesting appointment. The QBR need to get back on track quick, because it's a tough game at Preston. I watched a little bit of their game against Blackburn on Saturday, and they were very impressive against a decent Blackburn team. They absolutely steamrolled them. So really tough game. Need to get something out of it and stop the rot.
Yeah, because Kev, you probably have managers that you worked under that come in with like a specific idea. Like he said in his interview, he's got like principles of way, the way he wants to play, and they won't change. But in terms of like the system he plays, that can change. But yeah, I'm sure you probably have managers that come in with a specific idea and were quite reluctant to change, right? And it goes against the team, doesn't it? Sometimes when you're saying we're going to play this system, and you look at the squad and you're like, well, if we played this system, we'd probably get better results, you know?
Yeah, but any decent manager will assess the team, will assess the players and say, well, this is the best way they're playing to play. I mean, I think there was a case on Sunday in the second half to go a bit more direct against Burnley, because they dominated the midfield and we couldn't get the ball off them. So yeah. I was very surprised at halftime that Sinclair Armstrong didn't come on, went 4-4-2, and just put the ball in behind and put them under a bit of pressure, because I thought at that time that's what needed to get the crowd back on side and create a little bit of an atmosphere, because it was very flat. If that's what's needed in a match, hopefully Critchley will do that, because there's different ways to skin a cat. There's different ways to win games. You can't always be pretty. You know, I mean, we watched the World Cup the other day, and you got the purveyors of total football in Holland not playing well. Stick on 2 6-foot-5 centre forwards and just put the ball in the box and cause havoc. And that's
great,
Holland.
Yeah. Right, it's brilliant. I loved it.
That's what was needed. If you can't beat a team who are better technically and are better at keeping the ball, I mean, you don't go to Man City if you're Blackpool and try and outplay them, Dan. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, a good example of that on a lower scale is like last season. And, you know, obviously Swansea aren't Man City, but in terms of the way they play with the possession, it's like he knew that we weren't going to outplay Swansea in terms of possession. And I think in that game, off the top of my head, they probably had about 70-75% of the ball, and we had, you know, 25-30%, whatever. We won 1-0 from a goal from a set piece. I put it in my article as well. Gary Medine at the back post, header, and he come out after and said, yeah, you know, the gaffer said that they were weak at the back post and set pieces, and we worked on it in training. And it's like little things like that. He's really good at identifying weaknesses in the opposition and then working on them. And, you know, he's not like a snob in the sense that he's like, we have to play passing, attacking football. I mean, he tried to do that at first at Blackpool and it didn't really work. Like, we played quite a lot of long ball up to Gary Medine and, you know, got runners off him and things like that, and pace out wide, and a couple of sort of central midfielders that were more defensive and like ball winning type players rather than offensive minded. So he's showing at Blackpool, like, he's got a tendency to mix it up, and he will change things if it's not working. So, and I think the exciting thing as well is, like, he showed at Blackpool that he could, like, really organise a team out of possession and defensively to play really well. Like, we were the best defensive team in League One that season when we went up. And in the Championship, like, we didn't play the most exciting football. We didn't score a lot of goals, but we kept games tight, you know, a lot of nil-nils, 1-1s, 1-0 wins sort of thing. And that's what we needed for that, for a club who'd just come up from League One. But it will be interesting to see, like, how he adapts to QPR, obviously, because the squad is a lot better than the one he had at Blackpool, and QPR are going into games more often as favourites. So it's like, will he, you know, it's a bit of a different task, isn't it, to the one he had at Blackpool, I think. But I mean, just on the personality and the character side of things, Kev, like, obviously, like I said, we don't know what he's like behind closed doors, but have you worked with managers who are a little bit more reserved, a bit quieter, and is it like a weakness or anything, or like in your experience? Because obviously we kind of associate the best managers often with being ones that are, you know, ranting and raving, like people like Alex Ferguson and stuff like that. You know, does it matter really in today's day and age, do you think?
I think it's a little bit different. I think players are a lot softer. They need more of an arm around their shoulders. I mean, obviously, from looking back at my QPR days, Jerry Francis didn't really speak much to the players, really. You could approach him and talk to him, but it wasn't like an Ian Holloway who, really, you couldn't stop talking. So one of them who was really, you know, talk.
Yeah.
So it's different. You know, Jerry was very clever. He'd get these better players and arm around their shoulders and stuff, talk to them and G them up and tell them how great they were and how much he needed them. And Wayne Holloway would probably leave the better players alone and would be talking to the sort of the lesser better players to get them going. So different ways, but I don't know this Critchley that well, and it does come across more quiet and reserved. But it'd be interesting to see in the next month or so. I mean, first thing he's got to do, in my opinion, is get Chris Woolock on side, because for some reason on Sunday, that was the worst thing Chris Woolock played probably for QPR.
And it wasn't half time, obviously.
It wasn't because, look, you can have bad games and make mistakes, and but it was sort of a little bit of a lack of effort and it didn't seem as interested as he should have been. And so, and look, he's our best attacking player, there's no doubt about it. He needs to get him on side very quick. Very quick.
Mm. Just on Burnley, Kev, then, I mean, I had you look back on it, it just seemed like it was one of those games where, I mean, Burnley were just comfortable, weren't they, throughout the whole thing. Obviously, you can look at the first minute when George Thomas arguably could have had a penalty, and then the free kick that wasn't a free kick. You know, Jack Cork gets up and he's saying that, you know, he's thinking he's going to get booked for diving probably, and he's telling the ref that it's not a free kick. And then they score from that. So there are little things like that. Well, not little, but things like that that went against QPR. But overall, you look at the game as a whole, and it's just easy for Burnley, wasn't it? It came allowed to play their football. They were passing a short passing and then switching it over to the other side where the space was, and just didn't get near them, did they?
It's very often in the last maybe 2 years or last season and this season where QPR at home get sort of dominated possession-wise by the opposition, and that was the case on Sunday. We didn't get close enough. We didn't put them under pressure. When we did go long up to Lyndon Dykes, now I don't know whether the plan was for the centre-halves of Burnley to let him win it, but he did win it. But they picked up every second ball. He was basically, no one was around him, and he was just flicking it on to their centre-halves, who then started off another attack for them. No doubt they were the better team. Even if we'd have got the penalty, you don't know whether you go 1-0 up and then I don't think we would have won that game if we would have scored a penalty in the first minute. I really don't. I think they dominated us so much. I go on, and Chris Woolock was well out of sorts. I don't know what the reason was. And the team selection was very dubious. I mean, George Thomas hasn't played a game, really started a game for
first start of the season, I believe. I mean, he started a few back end of last season, didn't he, when it was all going wrong and Mark Warburton was just trying new things. But yeah, he's like barely played, has he, at all, even off the bench.
To make that sort of decision, I thought was a strange one as well.
I mean, we spoke, didn't we, in on the phone yesterday, just having a chat about the game, and you were saying, it just like, how often did they put a ball in for Lyndon Dykes? Like, I can't even remember a situation where they did it. It was just...
It was a display going back to that era before Christmas 2 years ago in lockdown when Warburton was really under pressure. I think you reminded me a lot of the Swansea game on Boxing Day that year where they just... I wasn't working Sunday. I was there as a punter, and I was annoyed by it because I had a friend over from Australia and I got him tickets for the match, and, you know, they phoned in a display like that. I thought they looked like a team that hadn't been coached all week, to be honest. There was no game plan. I think they really miss Rob Dickey. I think when you're playing a direct team, Jimmy Dunn, it should be in the side, but Rob Dickey gets the ball and brings it out the fence and gives you that option. There was no one bringing the ball out. They couldn't start anything. I watched a reserve game against, or a friendly against Livingston the other week, and the best player on the park was Taylor Richards. He didn't even come on. You know, picking the ball up, creating stuff. George Thomas.
He played well in the game against, I've forgotten who it was now.
Huddersfield came on. And, you know,
played really well, didn't he?
Yeah. Mm. George Thomas, you know, I tweeted something out about it, he's not been in the side. And I feel a bit bad for him because he's such a nice lad. He's a really, really good fella. Really, you know, one of the nicest blokes in the squad. And you kind of want him to do well, but
Worked so hard as well.
Big ask him to start. He starts, Kev said he hasn't started, I think, since a Charlton game in the Cup. You know, and he gets hooked at half time, which sort of, you know, it's not going to do his confidence anymore. But I just thought that the two centre backs, you know, I mean, shortly after the penalty shout, which I can see all the refs didn't give the penalty. Some days you get it, some days you don't. But the ball straight through the middle, and he should have scored that, really.
Yeah, definitely.
That was just players running through the middle. You're like, wow. You know, I thought Dizel and Ruben were poor. It was just bad. It was just, you know, the atmosphere was flat. I don't know if that's because of the football the night before. Poor excuse if it is, but I can sort of understand why people, it was cold. There's no new sign of a new manager. It just was flat. The attendance,
I think, it's a mixture of all those, weren't it? They all contributed.
Yeah, it was all that. It just felt from the off, it was cold. And, you know, you could see Ethan Laird going around trying to get the crowd going, but there was nothing really to get excited about. But I will say, though, you won't see three better finishes than that this season. That free kick was, it wasn't a free kick. And, you know, I don't know what the ref was doing. Obviously, he's in charge. It's my decision. The player saying it wasn't fouled, and he's still giving a free kick. That's a very odd. It was a magnificent free kick, really good. And then, you know, the second goal, that was right in front of me. That was a top finish, really. And then the mistake at the end, you know, it shouldn't have happened, but you give the guy
the finish.
It was a magnificent finish. But I mean, Senny, again, he's been sat on the bench for a month. He looked off. He didn't look at his best either. And everyone was just out of sorts. And it just kind of, you know, they know the team's been picked by a manager who's not going to be their manager. It's all a bit sort of disjointed and one to forget, really. But
they would have known who was coming in at that point. Like, maybe there was a bit of a, come on, we've got to impress the new guy. Do you know, there just wasn't that.
Yeah,
was
I mean,
there?
They make, the players make all the right noises, don't they? Oh, you know, we're focused and this and that. We're not going to let it affect us. The manager going, all yada, yada, yada. But it's obviously
did. It definitely did. Yeah, of course it did.
And the uncertainty of whether he's going to be there or he's not going to be there. It's, you know, this is a team that went to Watford and played very well and won, beat Sheffield United away. Well, excellent winning away at Millwall. You know, and you can't get away from it, since the uncertainty about whether Mick Beale's going or staying from that Wolves until he actually departed, then your performances have dipped. You can't get away from it. There's got to be a correlation as to why that is. So new manager needs to come in. I mean, from what you're saying, he's very good at planning a team to face the opposition and what they're good at and what can negate their strengths. Because that certainly wasn't the case on Sunday. That was a team that was just put out to play against Burnley, and Burnley pretty much did what they wanted to do. There's no play out the back. It was easy for them. Easy. And Rangers haven't really... It's been a while since Rangers have been bossed like that. I mean, they were against Fulham at home last year, and they were against Sheffield United, but they were teams that were injury ravaged, so you kind of give them a pass. But that was... Players were missing, but by and large, that was a reasonably, you know, strong team. And, yeah, they never got going. And as Kev said, I've never seen Dykes win so many headers. He's knocking the ball down, but there was no one there. So, you know, Dykes will always get blamed whenever Rangers don't play well. But I don't see what more he could have done. And, you know, there wasn't a single cross in the box. I mean, you watched the England game on Saturday. What won the game? A brilliant cross in the box and a good centre forward getting his head to it and scoring. I don't think Dykes had a single cross that came his way. And
I can't remember.
The only goal he scored this season, not this season, but in this horrible run of form they're in, was that game against Huddersfield. And what was it? A low cross into the 6-yard box. That's what he wants. And that's what he scores goals from. But, you know, you can stick whoever you want up front, but you've got to give him some service. And there wasn't any service. And, it has been said that, you know, he's coming into a situation which is quite good. Critically, the foundations are there and that, but he is almost coming into a side that's in relegation form at the moment, the way they're playing at the moment. So he's got a bit of work to do on his hands. And hopefully, you know, they're a better team with Stefan Johansson in it. Hopefully he's back fit for Saturday. You know, but I mean, I'd like to see Dickey back in the team. I thought Dickey was good against Coventry a few weeks ago. I think when QPR are good, Dickey is usually in the side. I think you should, personally, I think you should always play. I think they're better with him in the team. But yeah, we'll see what he does Saturday.
Yeah, I think Clive from Not For Words summed up quite well. He tweeted it was like a Burnley training session for a lot of the game, which I was like, yeah, it was. It was just so easy for them. And I was thinking about that clip with Roy Keane when he says, I can't remember who United were playing against, Man United, but he says, like, I might just smash into somebody just to make me feel better.
Do you know what? What I might do is I might smash into somebody just to make me feel better.
Do you know what I mean? He kind of wanted that. And there was a couple of times where, like, Dazelle suddenly got up for it and he went into a challenge. And then, like, when Burnley scored the second goal, Jimmy Dunn's going over and grabbing the ball off him. And you're like, just trying to get up for it a bit. But it was like, it happened a little bit. And then it was just back down to the usual level in that game, which was just Burnley dominating. So, yeah, really disappointing.
Thanks for listening to part one of this podcast. We'll be back later in the week with part two ahead of the Preston game on Saturday.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.